This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehigis Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Otherwise, World Food Program spokesman Thompson Fieri warns 1.26 million refugees will have their monthly relief cash and food rations cut by 40%.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva about the UNHCR funding shortfall. Details coming up. Also, a number of countries are banning South Africa's in and outbound flights. And Malawi has closed its borders after confirmed cases of COVID-19 jumped 75%. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Increasing numbers of countries are banning South Africa's in and outbound flights after the recent confirmation of a new variant of COVID-19. Scientists say the mutation is driving a second wave of coronavirus in South Africa. More than 930,000 cases have been recorded and almost 25,000 fatalities confirmed. That makes South Africa the worst affected nation in the continent hit by the pandemic. Darren Taylor reports.
The new variant, known as 501.V2, early data suggests it's more infectious and spreads faster than the original virus, which leads to more hospitalizations and deaths. Scientists say the South African mutation is not the same as the one found in Britain, but it's having similar consequences. Countries around the world say, for the time being, South Africans are not welcome in their territories. Martin Schaffer is Germany's ambassador in Pretoria.
It seems that this new variant has not arrived yet in Western Europe and not in Germany, and that is why the federal government took the decision to be careful and to be vigilant. And it means that there's a travel ban for each and everyone from South Africa into Germany, certainly until New Year's Eve, and we have to see what happens beyond. And that gives us...
He says South African and German medical scientists will together analyze research on the new variant of COVID-19, and his government's future actions will depend on those results. The South African authorities expect the many countries that have banned Britons to also ban their citizens. A health department official in Western Cape province, Sadiq Karim, says the coronavirus mutation seems to be driving a sharp rise in serious cases, especially in Cape Town.
So to give you some example of those numbers, on Saturday we recorded the highest ever number of new cases that we've had, even surpassing the number that we had in the first peak during June. We had 4,602 new cases on Saturday alone. By yesterday, we had 2,500 people admitted across our hospitals in the public and private sectors in the province.
Dr. Gerrit de Villiers, the manager of Mediclinic, one of South Africa's biggest private hospital groups, says nurses and doctors from other less pressured parts of the country are being asked to help in the Western Cape.
I think our main challenge, as with all hospital groups and the public sector, is that staff members can be recruited and ready to work, and then all of a sudden either have high-risk exposure at home or at work, or get COVID infection themselves, and then all of a sudden they're no longer able to work.
Karim says the spike could not have happened at a worse time, in the middle of South Africa's vacation period.
It's the festive season, it's holiday mode, people are still drinking, there's still lots of road traffic accidents, there's lots of interpersonal violence, and unfortunately all of those contributed to the significant increase in our hospital admissions.
In response to the surge of infections, the state has introduced harsher restrictions, including limited days and hours for liquor sales. But Karim says in some areas the regulations aren't working, and ICUs that should be reserved for critical COVID-19 patients are full of people with other conditions.
We still have a number of patients that need to be admitted as a result of trauma. And it's just wanton behavior. You know, people have become, I suppose, more lax about their behavior during the festive season, contributed by alcohol that's probably still freely available. And that combination is just an explosive situation.
The explosions are erupting across South Africa right now, ignited by what some local scientists say is a perfect storm of alcohol abuse, non-adherence to safety protocols such as social distancing, and a new, more infectious COVID variant. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Malawi has closed its borders after confirmed cases of COVID-19 jumped 75% in the past 2 weeks. Malawi's authorities attribute the surge to relaxed preventative measures and increased cross-border traffic for the holidays. Health campaigners have welcomed the border closure, but say Malawi should also mandate face masks and sanitizers. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi reopened its borders and eased restrictions on social gatherings in October following a drastic fall in numbers of confirmed COVID-19 cases from a total of 1,065 active cases on October 3. The country's total caseload dropped to just 30 as of December 11. But since then, the cases have spiked. As of December 22, the confirmed cases surged to 210. With 187 deaths. Kumbize Kandodo Chiponda is the co-chairperson for the President's Task Force on COVID-19. Kandodo Chiponda, who is also the Minister of Health, said the siege has forced government to reintroduce some of the restrictions. She spoke at a television press conference Tuesday in the capital, Lilongwe.
We are taking this border issue very, very, very seriously, because it is the port of entry which is bringing in a lot of people who are positive. And most of them, they also come without the COVID negative test. So we're urging all those who are planning to come to Malawi for holiday, we're saying sorry, bear with us.
Kandodo said only Malawian citizens returning home will be allowed entry.
I know we had some who had gone back to holiday, they have to come back. But also the special groups like deportees, we have also looked at how we are going to manage them.
By deportees, she means Malawians returning from South Africa to escape poverty and joblessness triggered by the pandemic. And the Malawi government has also reintroduced a ban on public gatherings of more than 100 people. Some faith groups, musicians and sports associations say the restriction on social gathering will inconvenience their activities planned for the festive season. But Minister of Health authorities say they will review the restrictions after 2 weeks. Maziko Matemba, Executive Director for the Malawi Health and Rights Education Program, welcomed the move, but says government should also mandate the face masks and sanitizers.
People were not following the measures because the messages were not coming forth like it could be expected. People were using conventional communication, but this requires sometimes door-to-door. It requires other enforcing mechanisms so that people are able to adhere to these measures. The law enforcers need to be equipped.
In the meantime, the Malawi government says Labour Minister Kenny Kandodo has tested positive for the coronavirus, which causes COVID-19. He is the first cabinet minister in Malawi known to have contracted the virus. Health authorities say Kandodo is in good condition at a hospital where he was admitted 3 days ago. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
In a proclamation yesterday, U.S. President Donald Trump restored the Democratic Republic of Congo's favored trading status. The reinstatement recognizes the DRC's progress on several fronts, establishing a market-based economy, rule of law, political pluralism, and the right to due process, as well as eliminating barriers to U.S. trade and investment, and enacting policies to reduce poverty and protect human rights. According to the French news agency AFP, former U.S. President Barack Obama removed the DRC from favored trading status because of reported human rights abuses by security forces, including the widespread use of rape as a weapon of war. Now, U.S. officials are voicing optimism on the trajectory the DRC is taking under President Felix Tshisekedi, who took office in January 2019 after the country's first peaceful transition of power. The World Food Program reports it is forced to cut food rations for more than 1 million refugees in Uganda because it has run out of cash. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN's food agency is running a shortfall of nearly $96 million for its refugee operation in Uganda. It says no refugees will go hungry if international donors dig deeply into their pockets and come up immediately with the cash the agency needs to feed them. Otherwise, World Food Program spokesman Thompson Theory warns 1.26 million refugees will have their monthly relief cash and food rations cut by 40%. He says these cuts go into effect in February.
Most of these refugees in Uganda have fled conflict from South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, and Burundi. While this year has been particularly hard for everyone, it has been incredibly difficult for refugees.
The anticipated cuts will further weaken an already vulnerable population. The WFP received only half the money it needed for its humanitarian operation this past year, so it was obliged to cut rations in April. This coincided with the COVID-19 lockdown, which increased the need for more assistance. The next cut in rations will leave most refugees on a diet of less than 1,300 calories per day.
While appealing to donors for urgent funding, WFP will strive to maintain life-saving assistance to the most vulnerable groups, such as the malnourished, children, as well as pregnant and nursing women. But we fear there are many whom we might not be able to help.
Theory says hunger is on the rise in all 13 refugee settlements in Uganda. He says an analysis of the food situation between June and December finds refugees face acute levels of food insecurity. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Uganda is leading an HIV vaccine trial on the African continent. Volunteers for the testing will be clustered in five groups ranging between 18 to 40 years of age from HIV high-risk communities in Uganda, Mozambique, Tanzania, and South Africa. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
The PrepVac HIV vaccine efficacy test will look at two ways to prevent the spread of HIV. First, it will test two different vaccine regimens, and it will study whether a new form of the oral pre-exposure prophylaxis drug PrEP, Descovy, taken daily is equivalent or more effective than the existing Truvada medication. The study is being undertaken among HIV high-risk communities such as female bar workers, people living and working around main highways, commercial sex workers, and fisher folk, among others, in five sites in four African countries. The sites are Masaka in Uganda, Maputo in Mozambique, Durban in South Africa, Mbeya and Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. The trial aims to enroll at least 1,668 participants across all its sites over the next 3 years. Professor Pontiano Caleb is the director of Uganda Virus Research Institute and chief investigator in the PrepVac trial.
So these individuals will be given PrEP as they're being immunized in the initial 6 months, and then they'll be followed. So the design of the study is a little bit complicated, but it allows us to study two different mechanisms of protection, vaccine and oral PrEP, at the same time within one trial. The trial is going to be conducted among healthy male and female volunteers and likely to be at risk of HIV infection. They're HIV negative or tested.
PrEP is the proven intervention that has shown to prevent HIV, in which people at risk of contracting the virus take an antiretroviral drug before, prior to being exposed to HIV. Dr. Eugene Mozagira is the director and chief investigator of the study. He says preparations for the study started in 2018 with the registration cohort.
And what we are basically doing with the registration cohort is to find out if these sites, they have the capacity to actually do the trial. If the populations there would actually participate in the trial, would people accept it? Would they use it? So a lot of that preparation happens over a long time, in this case, almost 2 years. But also, at the same time, we are applying to the regulatory institutions in the different countries, explaining what we are going to do and getting permissions to actually do this research.
Professor Caleb says this is the first African-led HIV vaccine trial and is coordinated by Ugandan scientists.
Our team in Entebbe will do all the data for the trial from the 4 countries and most of the lab studies, especially those that are looking at immune responses. It is also important that it is allowing us to grow more capacity to conduct studies of this kind so that Africans themselves can lead and run studies of this size as the leaders. There's hope that our trial will be among those that will show efficacy in protection.
An estimated 20.7 million people are living with HIV in East and Southern Africa. Available data from UNAIDS indicates that in 2019, the region saw 730,000 new infections and 300,000 HIV/AIDS-related deaths. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
More than 170 people have died from yellow fever outbreak in Nigeria this year, despite vaccines being available since 2004. A preference among some Nigerians for traditional herbal medicine is part of the problem. But experts say apathy to vaccines in rural areas is the biggest challenge, as Ifeok Etang reports from Bauchi, Nigeria.
Nigerian car washer Jonathan Saleh caught yellow fever from mosquito bites while in secondary school 23 years ago, before a vaccine was available to treat the viral disease.
So when I have that sickness, that fever, my lips turns yellow and my tongues and my eyes, my eyeballs becomes yellowish, and I was vomiting yellow. So I was thinking I'm going to die, and God saved me. I went to the hospital, he gave me drip and some drugs.
Nigeria has had the yellow fever vaccine since 2004 and offers it free for children. But since 2017, outbreaks of yellow fever have left scores dead and many others suffering. Dr. Rilwano Mohammed, the executive chairman of the Bauchi State Primary Healthcare Development Agency, says many parents fail to get their children vaccinated.
Without the smart survey, we find out that out of the people that we sample, half have not taken the vaccination. The children that were sampled up to age of 5, half have not taken the vaccination.
While apathy among parents is the main challenge to vaccines, some Nigerians also opt for traditional medicine instead, like Amado Muhammad, who claims he was cured from the yellow fever by visiting the community traditional healer.
Cody.
We just agree with herbal medicine, Mohammed says. He says we don't often go to the hospital. That is how we are here. How we are treated is that the syringe is placed in fire, Mohammed says. Once the needle turns red, the herbal doctor makes some prayers on the syringe before piercing it into our chest. That is a gift God has given him, he says. Aisha Rufai, an immunologist in the city of Jos, believes more Nigerians are willing to get the yellow fever vaccine, which lasts a lifetime.
If you actually, because there is great awareness now, almost everybody is aware of immunization. So that of traditional, we find is very minute number of people that go for traditional.
The Nigerian federal government plans to carry out a massive yellow fever immunization campaign across 5 high-risk yellow fever states, starting mid-January. Ifeok Etang for VOA News, Bauchi, Nigeria.
In what must be considered good news under tragic circumstances, over 3,000 Malian refugees were allowed to return to the refugee camps in Burkina Faso, where they had lived since 2012. More returnees are on the way. The refugees were forced to flee the camps 9 months after being threatened by armed extremists terrorizing the region. The relocation was made possible through the joint efforts of Burkina Faso's national and regional governments, which have tightened security for the camps, and the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, which has been hard at work improving shelter, health, education, and other services there. To find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Malikia Trigg, a UNHCR spokeswoman based in Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso's capital city.
We're very pleased to see that 3,000 Malian refugees were able to move back to Goudoubou camp. They had fled violence in Mali, and they've been living in two camps, Goudoubou and Mantao. And in March last year, there's been some attacks on the security post near the camp by armed groups, and they were also threatened and received an ultimatum. So that's when they left to the nearby city of Dori, where UNHCR had assisted them in paying their rent and then providing some water for them to be able to live.
It must have been so hard for them, first to have to flee Mali, and then have to flee from the refugee camp in Burkina Faso, where they seem to have achieved at least some measure of stability or normalcy.
And they were actually requesting us to go back to the camp. So that's when we worked with authorities to strengthen the facilities within the camp, to build up to 1,500 shelters. Some had been damaged or destroyed by the weather when the camp was left empty. And then we refurbished and we restocked the health clinic and the primary and secondary school that are ready to reopen and will welcome students after the holiday break. We also expecting livelihoods to return, including farming, pastures, land for cattle. And it's already extremely pleasant to see that they're already reopening small businesses in the camp, including grocery shops and butchers, which is an excellent first step.
And of course, you had to work with the authorities to make sure that better security was in place this time.
We held discussions at the regional and at the central level, and thankfully they agreed to increase the security measures. They sent some additional personnel. They decided to increase the patrols, and we supported them also with some of the reinforcement of the infrastructure.
Tell me about the return itself. It must have been quite something to see.
It was done in several days with a convoy of buses and trucks, but also some refugees also used motorbikes or tricycles. Some also moved on foot with their cattle. So it was quite a vibrant scene to witness.
And then there's the additional danger posed by the worldwide COVID pandemic. How did that figure into UNHCR activities?
So with COVID, we held some sensitization sessions with refugees and also internally displaced people in Burkina Faso to inform them about the outbreak and to encourage them to respect the preventative measures. We also did a number of distributions of soap and hand-washing devices.
It's actually quite big-hearted on the part of Burkina Faso and its people, who are already undergoing extremely hard times themselves.
Yes, this positive development comes also in the context of massive displacements in the country due to insecurity and violence, with more than 1 million people inside Burkina Faso displaced in what UNHCR calls one of the fastest growing displacement crisis in the world. It shows great generosity in light of the turmoil that the country is going through.
I understand there are more refugees who are ready to return back to the camp from the town.
Yes, so we're expecting the returns to continue in the coming weeks, over 2,100 people, and we'll continue to work with the authorities to organize those additional returns.
Malikia Trigg is a spokeswoman for the United Nations High Commission for Refugees based in Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso. She spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the interview.